Good morning. How are you all this morning? Good, good. It has been an absolute pleasure the last, we've been a week here, the intern showed up on this past Wednesday. It's been an absolute pleasure and joy to have been spent time with the students, the church as a whole, just amazing, amazing, amazing. And just as Juliana was saying, that the beauty of just being able to travel around the world, on the other side of the world, and not know anybody, and land in a space, and know there's an instant connection because we're the family of Jesus. It's been amazing. We loved it. It's been a wonderful weekend. With the students last weekend doing the staycation, we do something similar in Houston, Texas, very similar that we have a whole students come for the whole weekend and do some things with them. And what Morgan was alluding to or speaking about was we have what we call a confession room. Maybe you can set one of these up in your house. I don't know. But but we put paper all over the walls. We put some worship music on there, and we kind of remove all the distractions. So we try to block the windows and everything. So there's no distractions, but you're just focused in that moment. And you walk in the room, and the goal is you walk in, and we have some markers or cookies and things there. And you just are, the goal is to write down whatever you're struggling with, your sin patterns, the things that are carrying you down, your weights, the lies you believe about yourself, all the garbage that we carry constantly. Just write it down as an act of confession before Jesus, saying, hey, Jesus, these are the things I'm struggling with right now. And it's always been, we've done this now for 3 years with our youth. And we did it again this last weekend here with your youth. And it's always incredibly profound to have those moments. It's one of those moments where you walk in the room and it's like you feel like you get hit by the presence of God as you walk in at times. You know, there's such an intense weight of His presence. And knowing that you're in that moment, you write those things down, and then when you walk out of that room, it's gone. It's dealt with. You've confessed it before Jesus, and Jesus is saying, I'm going to take this now. I'm going to navigate you through this. I'm going to wash you clean, make you whole. And we practice that quite a lot back in Houston, this idea of confession. We have it's healthy for us, even as adults. Maybe you can practice this with some of your friends, some of your partners and mates. Sit down and have some coffee together and say, this is what I'm struggling with. It's the greatest thing in the world, because then suddenly all the things the enemy has in your life that he has strings on, and these lies we believe about ourselves and the secret sins we hold so dear sometimes, and we think, if everybody ever knew this about me, they wouldn't love me. And suddenly to get all that out and realize you're still loved. You're still loved by God's people. You're still loved by Jesus himself. It's an amazing feeling, and you're incredibly free, and you realize the enemy has no hold on you suddenly. And that's the beauty of confession. So we did that this last weekend. I could go on and on about that. We did that this last weekend. It was a wonderful thing. Had a great time with your students. I bring you greetings from Houston. I almost said North Carolina. That's where I'm born. I was born in North Carolina. Houston, Texas, One Life Church. We've been there the last 4 years. Greetings from the team there. We've seen God do some amazing things over the last couple years. We'll touch on a few stories this morning, maybe. But over the last couple years, about 2.5, 3 years ago, at our youth camp during the summer, God began just to move radically through our youth camp. Just one of those moments just kind of still rocked us. You know, if you do youth or youth work at all, you've gone to a youth camp maybe in your younger years, you went to youth camp, and the first night is always like, it's the first night, then it's the second night, then it's the third night, and it's the last night, right? You know, kind of builds like that. We had that same anticipation going that summer into our youth camp as normal. It's going to be the first night, then second, the third, and then the last night. And we came in prepared with a plan of how to navigate that, to move the students through that journey. And we came the first night, and the first night suddenly went, it's the first night! You know, like, oh, wait a minute, hold on here. And after about 3 hours of worship later, and then we finished worship, we went outside with a bunch of students, and then only to find out that a group of students had stayed behind in the auditorium and spent another 2.5 hours worshiping and praying over a student that was deaf because they wanted to see this young lady healed. And they're like, oh my gosh, what have we done? You know, I'm a word. And through that week, we saw healings take place. We saw radical salvations take place. And I remember at the end of that week going to our student leadership team and saying, guys, this is the Jesus we serve. It's not a camp Jesus. It's not a staycation Jesus. This is Jesus. And can I say to us as adults in the room this morning and everybody in the room this morning that that's not a camp, that's not a young person Jesus, okay? That's not just a camp Jesus, that this is the Jesus we serve, that he wants to radically encounter us. He wants us to carry his presence everywhere we go, from the corner shop to the barber shop. He wants us to encounter Jesus in those spaces. He wants to speak to us night and day, not just in a worship moment like this, like we had this morning. Every moment of every breathing day you've got, he wants to be with you. And not only does he want to be with you, but he wants you to carry life wherever you go. And so we've, over the last 2.5, 3 years or so, after that camp, I went to our students and said, listen, we can have a camp Jesus or we can have the real Jesus. But if we're going to have the real Jesus, we've got to give ourselves to him like this continuously. And the students actually took me seriously. And 3 years later, we're still seeing our general Wednesday night youth meetings happening like this. We started with about 35 students about 3 years ago. We now run between 200 and 250 students on a Wednesday night just to worship and celebrate Jesus. all our students pile down front, and you get just a horde of teenage bodies down front. Okay. And you realize there are lots of junior high boys in the room because you smell it. It's great. It's okay. It's okay. We like that. We like that. I'd rather smell it than not have it, right? So we like that. We have one of my personal philosophies about worship is that if you're not sweating, you're not worshiping. Because I told the students this week, and you know, I mean, you guys have football here in the UK, right? Some of you are good, passionate football fans. Maybe you go to a game once in a while. Maybe you watch the Premier Cup or the World Cup. And I've seen moments and clips and video things like you got the TV. No! God! Oh my gosh! Right? Like, you're screaming because a leather ball filled with air moves into a net. We're losing our heads over a ball filled with air, a piece of leather filled with air moving into a net. No! Right? So if we can do that over a piece of leather filled with air, how much more should we be doing for Jesus? How much more? So yeah, that's what we encourage in our youth. We encourage, if you're going to worship, worship. So can I say to us this morning, if you're going to worship, worship. Give yourself to it. We don't like doing anything half-hearted in Houston, Texas. I think it's a Texas thing. I don't know, right? Yeah. But there's nothing half-hearted about what we do. Either you're going to do it or not do it. Get in or get out, but don't play games. Preparing for today, so much. Oh, my goodness. There's so much. So preparing for the day, first of all, quick, a little bit about me. My name's Adam. My amazing wife's Vanessa. She was helping lead worship this morning. We've been married 25 years this year. We went out for her birthday last night. Is actually her birthday present to me. It was her birthday, but her birthday present to me because I love sushi. You have the amazing art of sushi. You need to go down there and try it, okay? Best sushi I've ever had in my life. Amazing, amazing. We went there last night. We have five boys. We have five boys in total. We have Sia, who's from South Africa. We lived in South Africa about 15, 16 years. A young man named Sia Bonga Global came lived with us. He's now part of our family, and he is with us in South Africa. He's now with us in America. He's 30 years old. We have Keenan, who's our next oldest. He's actually here with us on the trip. He's at the other site down at 502. He's down there on the keys doing worship this morning down there. Hopefully, he'll be here tonight. And then we've got Jaden, who's just turned 15. He's our rambunctious adventurer. I just watched a little video of him this morning. I was catching up what was happening through social media in his life, right? You know? And I saw he went to a friend's kind of little farm area in Texas for the spring break this last week. And last week, he was lifting weights, and he hurt his back a bit. And I said, boy, now your back's hurt. You need to take it easy. Yeah, Dad, no, I'll take it easy. This week, I saw him picture way up climbing a tree somewhere. This morning, I was on there looking at social media, and he's rolling down a hill going, oh, my back, as he's rolling down the hill. I'm like, that's Jaden, okay, that's Jaden. Then we've got Aaron, who's 10 years old. Aaron is our truth speaker. Aaron, we're trying to teach Aaron about being polite and gracious and kind. If he's at your house, if you invite us to your house for dinner, and you'll say, oh, did you like that, Aaron? If he didn't like it, he'll tell you, no, I did not. No, Aaron, that's great. You know, we want to be truthful, yes, but not quite that hard with the truth, right, Aaron? That's Aaron. And then Landon is our six-year-old, and Landon's our absolute genius of a young man. He's got an incredibly sharp, witty mind, and he loves his brothers, and he's full of life, and Aaron is the laugher in our house. Landon. Landon is the laugher in our house. Landon, if you get him at the dinner table and something happens and he starts to giggle and he just starts to laugh and laugh. We have videos from when he was 2 years old. He would just pack up and just laugh and laugh and laugh. So it's beautiful to have him in our house. He brings lots of laughter in our home, especially he and Aaron together at the dinner table. They giggle and giggle for no reason at all. And next thing you know, we're all at the dinner table laughing and food's flying everywhere because we're laughing so much. That's our family. We have a great team in Houston, Texas. Brian and Rachel Barr lead our team there. God's doing some amazing, wonderful things in Houston with our church. We come here and we see such a big room filled. It's a room filled full of people like this. It's exciting for us. And preparing to be here for this week, I was praying, like, God, what do you want to speak? What do you want to say to the people here? And without knowing lots of details and things, and then I shared last week at the other site, and I'll share again this morning that almost prophetically I felt the sense of you think God's doing something now. I feel like God's going to do something more. That the next move, there's like another move of God amongst your congregation, amongst your two sites, and you need to get ready for that. Not get ready just spiritually, yes, emotionally, yes, mentally, yes, but also physically for that. Because in case you notice, there's a slight problem this morning. there's not many chairs available, okay? And if God begins to move even more in your congregations, you need more space, you need more services, you need more something happening, right? Okay? And I really felt that in a sense coming into this time with you guys, that God wants to move and begin doing those things. And in response to that, I felt like God bring me to this passage in Joshua. And that's what we're going to look at this morning in Joshua, Joshua chapter 4. See? In Joshua chapter 4, and you pardon me, I have two sets of glasses. Yes, I'm that old. I have two sets of glasses, one that I can read and one that I can see you. So, in Joshua chapter 4, this is just after now they've technically crossed over the Jordan, and the Jordan was at flood stage, and incredible things were happening, and the children of Israel crossed over while it was at flood stage. The river was dry ground. They went to the other side, and after that, now it's kind of this little recap of what happened in that moment as they crossed the river. And I think it's important as God begins to do something among us, the thing we need to do before He moves among us like this, before the next steps happen, there's something they did which is quite important for us this morning, I believe. Joshua chapter 4, we're going to read verses 1 through 7 to start with. Then all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan. The Lord said to Joshua, "Take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man, and command them, saying, 'Take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in a place where you lodge tonight.' Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, 'Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever.'" Memorial forever. This idea of remembering that when God does something amazing, He wants you and I to remember it. When God does something amazing, He wants us to remember it. Now, one of the greatest things we have in life is this idea of memory, right? We can all think of wonderful memories, right? So the memory He's talking about here is not some kind of nostalgic moment memory, right? So I can remember things like when Aaron was born. Aaron was born in a town called Port Elizabeth, South Africa. Was Aaron? It was Aaron. I don't know. Long time ago. one of the boys. Born in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. And up to that point, all our boys had come early, exactly 2 weeks early. They'd never gone full term. All of our boys have come 2 weeks early. And so we went to the doc. We told the doc, "Listen, we know the pattern, doc. It's 2 weeks early." Doc's, no, don't worry. We'll wait until Vanessa, full labor comes. We'll wait. It's probably going to, you say that, it's probably going to happen later. No. It's going to happen 2 weeks early. No. Okay, all right, fine, doc. You'll wait and see. Sure enough, 2 weeks early, Van goes in labor in the middle of the night. So now everybody's panicking. We go to the hospital. It's a small hospital in Port Elizabeth, not a big one. We get there late. The doctor's rushing in. The nurse is rushing in. They rush Van in. She has to have her emergency C-section. They put me in a little closet and put my garb on, the little head thing and the little feet thing and the uniform you got to go in the operating room with. And I get in there, and Vanessa gives birth to this amazing young boy, and where it's a happy moment, and I'm holding him. He's crying. It's great. I got another boy in the family. It's exciting. And then they fix Van up, and they take Vanessa off, and they take my little man off somewhere, and they say, "Listen, you go and change, and you'll meet us in the recovery room with your wife." Great. No problem. It's probably 2 or 3 in the morning. So I go in the little change room. I change. I put my normal clothes back on. I finish everything. And I go in the hallway, and I walk out in the room actually first. And I look, and there's no nurses and no babies and no doctors. Shh, it's quiet. Okay, maybe they're in the hallway. So I go out in the hallway, around the hallway, look both ways. Nobody's there. Maybe they're in the other hallway. So I go to the other side of the room, look down the hallway. And because I was not like most adventurous teenagers, I probably saw some things I shouldn't, like horror movies when I was younger, right? And in that moment, I'm standing in the hallway, an empty hospital, it's dead silent, there's one light at the end flickering. And all I can hear is, in that moment you think, oh, okay, my wife and my baby, they're all gone, everybody's dead, what's going to happen? I got to find these, but I got to find my wife. I got to find my kid. What's going on? So I go out in the hallway, and I kind of walk down the hallway and look at this intersection. Nobody there. Go down the hallway, look at this intersection. Nobody there. It took me like 15, 20 minutes to actually find myself through this hospital in the middle of the night. Nobody was around. Like, where are all the sick people even? Come on, Nobody was around. Eventually, found Vanessa, found my little guy. Everybody's happy, and we're actually here today. Yes, okay. That's a memory I've got, but that's not necessarily a memory that builds faith for me, you know? That doesn't build my confidence the next time I go to a hospital, really. The memory he's talking about here is not some nostalgic moment of walking out and smelling a flower and going, oh, remember when we were young and used to play in the field? He's not talking about that moment when you hear a song and suddenly your heart goes, ah, oh, remember when we were in love back then? No, you're still in love now, okay? He's not talking about this nostalgic memory. He's talking about remembering something which is going to build your faith for the future, to remind you that God did it here and he'll do it again and again and again and again. Those are the things he wants us to remember and build memorials for to some degree. And that's what he's done here. He said, listen, find 12 men to build a memorial. Find 12 men to find 12 stones. Now, we're not talking about some little pebbles like you find in your driveways here. Ka-tink, there's a little stone. here, grab a stone. Okay, got a stone. There's 12 little stones, little pile of rocks there on the ground. There, ooh, it's a big memory there. Jesus, God did amazing things. It's not the only thing. No, he said, remember, pick 12 strong men from the 12 tribes. Pick up a stone. It's like, you know the strongman competition, like global strongman competition. You've seen those stones they pick up, those Atlas stones they call them. They got these stones, right? They walk like this with them. I can picture 12 guys walking across the river. Everybody else is like, yeah, this is amazing. The river's dry. It's incredible. And it's 12 guys. Okay. They got the 12 stones. They drop the stones on the side. They pile them up. There's 12 stones. You remember that moment forever. Forever. That's what he's talking about here. One of the greatest things we have in our faith is to remember what the Father has done for us. To remember, to build our faith. That's why I love telling stories. It's my way of remembering. Telling stories of I had two friends, two personal friends, not something you read in a book, not something way back when. Two friends, personal friends of mine in South Africa, raised from the dead. Two. Both of them, massive heart attacks, different times, not the same time. That'd be crazy. One of them dead for over an hour, no heart. One of them dead for 3 hours. Both of them still alive today with their families. One of them just swam a mid-mar mile thing just a couple weeks ago and then ran another marathon. Like, what the heck? 3 years ago you were dead. Now you're running and swimming. What's up with that? I tell those stories because that's my Jesus. Those are big memories. Remember those things. Let it build our faith and stir our faith that he wants more for us. He wants more for your little town. He wants more for this city. He wants more for this nation. Don't settle because it's hard and difficult out there. Don't settle for the same old, same old. Why is memory important? Because the greatest enemy, one of the greatest enemies to God, one of the greatest strategies the enemy uses is forgetfulness. We forget to remember. We forget. Someone's in this room, have you forgotten how much Jesus meant to you a few years ago? Now your faith is, I'm just here on a Sunday, I'm just hanging out with Jesus, it's okay. Maybe life's been tough the last couple years. Maybe life's thrown you some difficult challenges. Maybe sin or sickness has come into your family and it's been hard. And you begin to forget the goodness of a loving, gracious, kind Father. I want to remind you today of your loving, gracious, kind Father. To remember those good things that he's done for you in the past. Remember when you didn't think you're going to make it and you're sitting here today anyway. Remember when you thought you've lost everything and that now you're still sitting here worshiping that same Jesus. Remember. Why do we remember? There's three reasons why we remember. The first reason we remember is because it's important for our own personal faith. Remembering is important for our own personal faith. If you shift over to a little bit further down in Joshua chapter 4, and we see in verse 19, of Joshua chapter 4. Says this, the people came out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. They encamped at Gilgal on the east of the east border of Jericho. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. Why would such a random detail be thrown in like that? It seems such a random thing. They've crossed the river, great miracles happened, and it was important for them to know, remember, on the 10th day of the first month. Why was that important? Because on the 10th day of the first month, just over 40 years earlier, was when they're all huddled in their little homes,
And there was a spirit hovering over the city, the town they were in, and the firstborn were being killed. But not of these people, because they had put the blood of the lamb on their doorpost, and the spirit hovered, went over their house and didn't take the firstborn. That's a moment to remember. I don't know about you, but if that had happened to me, that's very personal. I've got a firstborn young man in my house. I've got a son in my house. I've got a child in my house. I know what it would be like. I can imagine what it would be like to lose a child on a night like that. To know that in this moment you hear the screams of other families and that spirit come over and it passes over and we are saved and delivered because of the blood of the Lamb. That's important. That's personal to me. He said, on this first day, of the 10th day of the first month, it's personal. Remember, it's good for your own faith. It's good for your own faith. In Chronicles, chapter 16. Chronicles chapter 16, verse 8 through 12, say this. Chronicles 16, verses 8 through 12. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call upon his name, make known his deeds among the peoples, sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of his wonderful works, glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his presence continuously. Remember the wondrous works that he's done, his miracles and the judgments he's uttered. Remember the wondrous works he's done. Remember the wondrous works. What has he done in your life? When was the last time you told the story about a miracle that happened to those sitting around you? When was the last time you sat at the lunch table and just told the story of God's goodness in your life? When was the last time you took a moment in the morning as you drank your tea or your coffee and you sat there maybe in your room looking out over your garden and just ponder and give thanks for the wondrous works he's done in your life? When? Remember. It is good for your personal faith, because when we don't remember is what we see happening over in Psalm 77. In Psalm 77, verses 4 through 10. The psalmist is writing these. You hold my eyelids open so that I am troubled that I cannot speak. I consider the days of old, the years long ago, he's beginning to remember. And I said, let me remember my song in the night. Let me meditate in my heart. Let me remember the song in the night. Let me meditate in my heart. Then the Spirit made a diligent search. And this is what they started to recognize. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love ceased? Are his promises at the end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Some of you are here this morning and you're wondering, has God forgotten to be gracious? You've been through moments in your life where you felt like, has God forgotten to be gracious? Life's tough because we've forgotten to remember when he did move. To remember to refresh our faith, restore our faith, to stand strong in our faith again, knowing, yes, it's tough. Yes, it is the night and it is difficult, but I will remember. I will meditate on his wondrous works. You know what meditate is, right? It's not sitting in the room chanting, okay? No, meditating is like, so in Texas, we love meat, right? We love meat. If you come to Texas, you're going to have a really big, thick, juicy steak. Sorry if you're vegetarians, you're missing out. So you got these incredible slabs, literally slabs of meat. If you go to someone's home and they're going to do ribs for you, they're going to do steaks for you, whatever they're going to do, they have worked on that meat hours. It's not they go to the grocery store, buy it, and slap it on the grill. No, that is sacrilege. Don't dare do that. You got to let the meat rest. Take its time. You put some spices, put some rub on it. They sometimes let the rub sit on for 24 hours because they want that meat to meditate. They want that meat to marinate in the spices. They want it to get to the core of that meat. So when you cook it, it's fully infused with flavor. That's what meditating is on God's word, meditating on his wondrous works. As you rest in those spices, you meditate, you rest in the spices of who he's been to you. You let them flavor your entire core, your entire being. So when you leave that moment, when you go onto the grill of life of you, when things get hot and a bit crispy out there, the flavor of who he is oozes out of you. You can't help it because you've meditated, you've marinated in his goodness. Remembering is important for your personal faith. Second thing remembering is good for, remembering is good Remembering is good for your family's faith. Remembering is good for your family's faith. Verse 21. Look at verse 21 of Joshua. Joshua chapter 4. Look at verse 21. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the people of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall let your children know, Israel passed over the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over. As the Lord your God did at the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the Lord of God is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Let your children know. Remembering is good for your family. Let your children know. What's important, I mean, I can kind of picture, you know, I mean, here's this family, this great Jewish family that is now probably 15, 20, maybe 30 years beyond this moment at the Jordan River. And they say, dad comes and says, hey, guys, we're going on vacation. We're going on holiday. Come on. We're going to go to camper and we're going to Mount Gilgal. We're going to Camp Gilgal for our vacation, right? We're going to the national park. It's going to be fun. We're going to hike and fish and have some great time there. Great. Dad, we're going to Camp Gilgal. Yeah. Okay. They all pack in the little camper van. They go to the Gilgal. They put their tents up and they get the stuff going. They start walking through the park and they come to the side of the river. And the kids are playing in the river. This is amazing. Dad, what are all these stones? Oh, guys, let me tell you. Do you know what happened 30 years ago in this spot? 30 years ago, me and your mom, we walked across that river and it was dry. No way, Dad. It was dry. The water piled up at a city called Adam. Really good city that. Really piled up at a city called Adam. And the water piled up there and it piled up in a heap over there and the river was completely dry and we walked across and we took 12 of these big rocks and stuck them here so every time we came to the National Gilgal Park, we would remember that God is good and he will always provide for us. He will always do wondrous, miraculous things for us. That's amazing, Dad. Can we ride that ride? No, it's not a ride. Okay. Not a ride. This is our life. What kind of memorial stones are you setting up in your family? They can be simple things. It can be simple routines of sitting around the dinner table and laughing and telling stories of your week and your day, remembering what God's done for us. We stumbled into, some memorial stones happen, it's not as intentional. I wish it was as intentional as just putting big rocks there. Sometimes you stumble into memorial stones. We as a family have stumbled into a memorial stone. Do you know, do you have a game called Candyland? Some of you know a game called Candyland here? It's a little kid's game. Anybody recognize Candyland? Nobody's like shaking their head. No. You need to go down to Sainsbury. Yeah, go down to Sainsbury and look for Candyland. But it's a good memorial stone, okay? It's a little game. It's designed for little kids in that sense that the way you move, you have your little kind of peoples there. You all have a certain color, a little person. And you have some cards. And on the cards are either one or two squares. And the squares are certain colors. So if you get a square, if you get a card that has two blue squares, there's a little chain, a little map on the board. You get to go two blue spaces. If you get a card with one red square, you get to go to one red space. And you progress through the board, and there's certain challenges and obstacles along the way. It's called Candyland because it's themed around candy. There's all these beautiful little candy things and the candy colors. And at the end is this picture of this rainbow pile of candy. It's lovely, right? Oh, that's so boring. It's paper. So one time when Keenan was about 3 years old or so, we were going to a vacation, a holiday in the mountains of South Africa, and I'm trying to make things exciting for us. I said, great, we're going to play Candyland, but hey, you know what? Let's play Candyland with real candy. I mean, it's Candyland, right? So we went and got some Smarties and some M&Ms or whatever else we got there with some colors, and we put the board out there, put a little people down, and every blue square had like a blue little Skittle and a blue Smartie, and a red one had a red one, and a purple one had a purple one. We had all the colors on the board, and the end where the pile of candy was, we had an actual pile of candy. That's like a three-year-old's dream. Yeah, right? And if you win, you get the whole pile of candy. Probably not healthy, but it's fun. And we played Candyland. And next year, we played Candyland again with real candy. But the candy got a bit bigger. And next year, and now here we are, Keenan's now 19, almost 19 years old. We've played Candyland for about 17 of those 19 years, every time I go on family vacation holiday. A couple years ago, we were going to holiday in Destin, Florida. We packed our stuff up and got to Destin, Florida. And Jaden, our adventurous one, said, Dad, when are we playing Candyland? Oh, I didn't bring it this time. Dad, what do you mean you didn't bring it? What? It's fine. You boys are bigger now. Dad, we have to play Candyland. This is not vacation. It's not a holiday. We don't play Candyland. What are you doing, Dad? We gotta go find it. We gotta go. You know, driving around Destin in the middle of the night trying to find Candyland. It was not easy as it sounds. Of course, you play Candyland now, and now the boys are bigger, and it's mounds of candy at the end of Candyland now, right? The boys help pick out the, Dad, we get this bag and this bag. No, five bags is enough, guys. Okay, really, it's one game, okay? But what happens, that's become a memorial stone for our family. It's not holiday unless we play Candyland together. And we laugh, and we laugh about the week. We laugh about the good things God's done for us. We tell stories. It provides moments of connection with our family. It's become a memorial stone for our family to remember how good our Father really is. Was it planned to be, but now it is. So go out, buy Candyland, become a memorial stone for your family. But what memorial stones are you intentionally setting up in your family? What things are you doing in your family to connect hearts, to remember and celebrate the goodness of our Father, to remember those big, miraculous moments? Not only is it good for our families, but also, as it said there in verse 19 we just read, it's also good for the world, right? Good for the world. What do these 12 stones mean? Then you shall let your children know. Israel passed over the dry ground. Goes on a bit further, down to about verse 24. It says, as the Lord your God did the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over, so all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord forever. So all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear him forever. It's good to remember so the world will hear how good our Father is. We brought a group of interns halfway around the world on a plane. Not because of some cool trip. Hey, we're going to the UK. Woohoo! Okay. No, we did it because we want everybody to remember how good our Father is. We want to be able to tell you stories of what he's doing with us in Texas. And we go back to Texas. We want to tell stories in Texas of what he's doing here with you in the UK. We want to share those stories around the world so the entire world will know how good and loving and kind and gracious and miraculous our Father is. That our faith will be built. Our faith will be encouraged. That your marriage would stay strong. Because right now some of you, it's in a difficult space. It seems like it's night. And you need to remember God has placed you together for a purpose and a reason. We're here to tell you how good and wonderful get you to remember because your relationship with your child is strained right now. And we want you to remember, even in this difficult moment, your Father is good and wonderful and waiting to work on your behalf. Moms, dads, what will your children remember of you? Will they remember a mom and dad come home from work? Hey, Dad, let's play. No, I'm just busy right now. I just come from work. Just give me a few minutes. Hey, Dad, let's go outside. Yeah, I'll be there in just a few minutes. Let me have a cup of tea. I'm just going to have a chat with your mom. Let me fix this thing in the garage quick. Let me just do one more email. Let me send one more message. Let me get a bit of work done. Will that be their memory? Mom, what will the memory of your child, what will the child's memory be for you? Hey, Mom, will you just hold on just a minute? Let me just finish washing these dishes quick. Let me just do one more chore. Wait, let me just finish my glass of wine. Just hold on one moment. Will it ever be a memory of just wait one more moment? What will your child's memory of you be? Husbands, wives, what will your memories of each other be? Will it be memories of arguing, fighting, not being gracious, kind, not being loving? Because those are memorial stones we're setting up in our marriages. And we remember those things, and they don't build our faith. They don't show us a beautiful, wondrous God. And they don't show the world a beautiful, wondrous God. What memories are we making here as a church community, a church body? We're making memories of just come sit here, do the same old, week in, week out, never having any expectation that God's going to move among us, never having expectation that God's really doing anything amazing. We're just doing church because that's what we do. The memorial stone has become worn and tired, laborious. Lord, we come here to make memories with Jesus every Sunday. Expect it. Hey, maybe somebody will get healed today. Maybe somebody will see and accept Jesus as Savior today. Maybe somebody's faith will be refreshed and encouraged today. Maybe someone will leave this place happier than when they left. Maybe anxiety and depression will be broken and set free today of people's lives. What kind of memories are we making? What kind of memorial stones are we setting up consistently? Because God wants to move you on to the next place. He wants to begin moving beyond this space. There's another move happening for you, and he's saying, remember well. Remember well. One of the greatest memorial stones we have in Scripture is in the New Testament. It's the idea of communion, right? We take communion pretty regularly, almost weekly. And some of us have gotten a bit religious about how we take it. Oh, yes, that time of the service again. Oh, here we go, do communion, a little juice, a little water. Okay, great. Do you remember? Do you take time to remember why we take communion? Jesus actually said, when you do this, do this to remember me. That's why you do it. Do it to remember a loving, kind, miraculous Jesus. Do it to remember the good things. Do it to remember that you've been set free, saved, healed, and delivered. Do it to remember that sin no longer has power over you. Do it to remember that sickness no longer has power over your bodies. Do it to remember I am a good God. Do it to remember that all we have is Jesus. Can I ask us to stand, please? We're going to take communion now. Ask the band to come on up. We'll take communion in just a moment together. We're going to do it collectively together. I want us to remember, have a moment of remembrance together. We'll do this together. But I encourage you, as you take communion, let it not be just another Sunday drinking some juice and taking some bread. If you're in a difficult space and you feel like night has shadowed over your life, can I ask you to be like the psalmist and just take a moment to meditate or marinate in his goodness? If you're struggling this morning to actually find the goodness right now, we're going to have a moment, just a few moments. We want you to come forward if you need prayer for anything, or find me before you need prayer for anything. We want you to remember his goodness. We want to blow wind in your faith sails this morning. But above all, let us remember Jesus, the one that made all this possible. The one that at Gilgal, the city where they put the stones at, was a city called Gilgal. Gilgal was named for a very specific reason, because this is a beautiful picture of Jesus in the sense that they crossed the river on dry ground. The river was at flood stage, just like a sin raging through our lives. It said that when they crossed, the water piled up by a city called Adam. The picture of sin and its power and its devastation being stopped at Adam and being dry all the way through the rest of his human history if we walk through and cross through with Jesus. And they come to this city called Gilgal, the city on the corner, on the edge of the river. They place this memorial at Gilgal. Gilgal means rolled away. The idea being that this thing of shame and condemnation was rolled away. They'd just been through 40 years of shame in the desert. 40 years being remembering how they blew it. They couldn't go in the promised land because they blew it in the beginning. 40 years of shame, walking day in and day out, being reminded how bad it was. And now they're finally coming into the promised land, and God's saying, hey, let this shame be rolled away. Let this being taken from you. It's kind of like a New Testament principle, a New Testament idea. You remember in the New Testament, there was a stone that was rolled away in the garden, right? And God, you went to that tomb, and the stones rolled away, and we look into that tomb, and it's empty, and we know for sure that our shame, our guilt, our condemnation, our sin has been rolled away. Let communion be that for us this morning, to remember it's been rolled away. Whatever you're carrying this morning, he's rolled it away. Come, let's get the bread and juice. You'll come individually and kind of grab that and go back to your seats, and we'll do this together in just a moment, okay? So you can go ahead and come now if you want to grab the juice and bread. Yeah, go ahead and come now.